Previously on Closet Practice.
Oh, I love that for me. But my boss called me as I was getting ready. And like, as I was speaking with her, I realized, oh, I haven't eaten all day. That's very rarely the case. And I'm like, usually a top. But like, I haven't eaten all day. And that's very rarely the case. And I was like, oh, maybe I should try bottoming today. So then I like end up spending like 15 minutes douching. And then like the Uber was late. And actually, no, I went to buy poppers. And the Uber left, so I had to wait for another Uber. So, like, it was a whole thing.
So it wasn't late.
It was just, like, a journey that I went through.
Got it. Okay, I remember you had mentioned that you had been douching because you thought that you had bottomed. I didn't realize that that was the reason that you were late.
Oh, it was part of it.
This is Closet Practice, a podcast for queers of all stripes to share their stories, whether they're in, out, or out curious. You can take queer life out of the closet, but you can't take the closet out of queer life. Maybe, though, we can shine a little light inside. I'm your host, Documentabarism, the trade of the season. Dingle Mary started working at his first job today, and I am not okay. It's not just that there's no way I'm old enough to have a child with a job, though it's partly that. More like, for a homocopter parent, trademark pending, like me, it's tough to relinquish that much control, especially knowing what he's had to deal with these last two pandemic years. So believe me, dear listener, when I say I was gooped and gagged to hear about Adam's free-roaming childhood. You may remember Adam from a previous orgy-themed episode of Closet Practice. We were supposed to do this interview the night of the infamous orgy that wasn't, but, well, listen to episode 21 to find out what didn't happen next. I was glad we could finally find time to connect, even though his stories triggered my mostly irrational parenting fears. To be honest, I'm a little bit jealous, too. I've never really told anyone about this, but when I was a preteen, I tried a couple times to get up to mischief with older men. I came close, but because I'm me, of course, I never succeeded, which I suppose is for the best. But I can still feel the thrill of the hunt, and I know exactly what drove Adam to do what he did at such a young age. Judge us if you wish, but you know what they say about stoning tights in glass houses.
My name is Adam. I am from Egypt, and I spent like all of my childhood between Egypt and Dubai. My parents were they wanted us to be incredibly precocious. And so I was allowed to like roam free from the age of like 8. Like I literally could like go out of the house and like just like walk around for hours and hours, or like go to a mall or go shopping. And like I had a curfew that was 9 p.m. but like between 5 and 9 p.m. I could pretty much do whatever I wanted, which was pretty nice. I was like this 7 or 8 year old, and I was just like out and about in the city doing things, and people would stop me and ask me like where my parents were or whatever, and I would be like, my parents are home, I know how to get home, they've allowed me to like come here or whatever. And people were always so confused, and it never like struck me how weird it was until I was much older, that I was just like allowed to roam free and do whatever the fuck I wanted. I think like my parents decided I was a prodigy when I was very young, which was like not true, I think. Like, it's okay, whatever. But the point is, I was also like a very loud ADHD kid, a diagnosed ADHD kid who was like still very good at school. They like just last week found a box full of my report cards. And apparently my report cards all had like all these comments from like teachers that are like, this kid will have a distinct future. He's just so into reading. And so my parents like really fostered to me. That's probably where like a little bit of my narcissism comes from. But my parents really fostered to me this idea that like I was brilliant. So yeah. And they still truly believe it. Like every time I'm like, Mom, this play I wrote is like a finalist for this award. Or like I got into a PhD program. They're like, that makes sense. You're a genius. And I'm like, okay, well, I actually did work for this, so maybe I appreciate that. But my dad had the parenting style of, I'm going to be very hard on you because the world is going to be very hard on you, and I want you to be ready for the world, which is so like 1950s, but I don't know. He was in that moment. And so like my dad was not the kind of person who was like very loving or very, I mean, he would tell you he loved you, but then he was like very, very strict and very hard on you. And I think like, it's also a fine line between like, I'm going to be hard on you, meaning I will be strict and I will be like an authoritarian abusive figure. And that line was definitely crossed many, many times in my childhood. I think my, and this is where we like delve into his family history, but I think like my dad definitely grew up in a house where he felt like he had no control or right to speak at all because of his parents. And I think like this is also cultural. This is largely cultural, like in, I think not just in Egypt, but in many, many parts of the world. And also generationally, there's the thing of like, you don't talk back to your elders. I think this was actually said in my childhood. And again, like I grew up in a fairly, not like staunchly religious, but fairly religious household. And my parents, I think at some, many times said like, your parents' words are the first words you listen to after God's word. They're pretty much like equivalent to God's word. If your parents tell you something, you must do it. He pretty much like did not, he felt like he wanted to be the ultimate authority and to not be questioned entirely. And even as like a 7-8-year-old, being the like precocious, stubborn asshole that I was, I like challenged him a lot, and that resulted, and like that consistently resulted in escalation, which like he would always quote unquote win because he was the dad, but it also resulted in a lot of like verbal and physical abuse. So we did not have a great relationship is the short answer. When I actually look back on all these incidents, the fight was never about the thing. It was the fact that I questioned his authority. And what it would ultimately result in was either incessant bullying in front of other people or physical abuse. And also like actively marginalizing you from spaces. So like, I feel like I spent like a big fraction of the ages between like 7 and 17 in my room alone because I disagreed with my dad about something, and so I couldn't do things, or I couldn't do things with the family. People rarely ask me, when did you realize the concept of gay? And the truth is, like, it was very, very shortly before I realized I was gay. What I did have a concept for from a very, very young age is the notions of like gender performance and femininity. Because I remember like in first and second grade, before like, I don't know, I didn't know what the fuck my gender performance was like or how I was different from other boys in any way. But I like remember even at that age thinking something is wrong with me and I am different from other boys because they routinely told me and reminded me of that for no good reason whatsoever. I think at that age, like first, second grade, so literally when I was like 6-7 years old, it often came down to physical strength. I was always the shortest male in my class. And to this day, I'm like fully grown adult, I'm 5'3". And there was a lot of like, quote unquote, physical fighting. I think that was like how boys, even at this age, attempted to demonstrate masculinity. And I remember consistently feeling like I was not on the same level of physical strength as other boys. I also, and that to me felt like something that I should be ashamed of and that I should try to hide, which is weird. Like, who knows if that was actually true, but I just remember that being a very distinct thought that I had in like my first, second, third grade. I also remember like in third grade, I went to like a somewhat, it wasn't a super religious school, but it was like a slightly religious school. And I say religious in a very specific and weird manner here because it was Dubai, where like everyone is an expat and immigrant. People are like of different religions. And so when I say religious here, it was actually not a specific religion. It was just like a general religiosity, meaning that there was like a conservatism around like gender relations and physical intimacy and what was assumed to be like standard social decorum. But no specific religion was actually ever invoked in my education, except for like the 1 hour a week where like all the Muslims went to an Islamic studies class and everyone else went to a I think it was like called Ethics, which is so funny. We were in like mixed gender classes till fifth grade, and then in fifth grade you were split up. So in third grade, I still was in a class with boys and girls. And I remember we had like a recess hour, and I remember very explicitly a bunch of the like quote unquote cool boys, whatever the fuck that means in third grade, telling me like, oh, during recess hour, you should go hang out with the girls because you're more like the girls. And honestly, all my closest friends in the school were the girls. So I was like, okay, like this feels weirdly rude, but like, cool, whatever. And then it got really bad where like, you know, fifth grade is when it becomes an all boys class and like, what, you're 11, 10, 11 at that time. And like people start to hit puberty. And that's when it was like I think when gender was separated and it was just like all straight guys and me, is when like the bullying started, is when like shit got really bad. And again, I had no notion of gayness at the time, or that like I wasn't thinking about my sexual desires at age 11. And then in seventh grade, I think we were playing a random game. So our parents picked us up from school, and my parents had this like interesting car share model where like one of their friends would take us in the morning with his kids, and then my mom would pick us and his kids back and bring us home because we like live in adjacent apartments. And we were playing this game in the car, me and like my parents' friend's son. And in seventh grade, he said, that's really gay. And my mother braked the car. Like the car like braked. And I was like, oh, okay, I guess this is not a word we should use. And then we got home and my mom like dropped, his name was Kareem. My mom dropped Kareem and was like, I'm gonna be having a talk with your dad. And I was like, I don't know what the fuck is going on. And then we got home. My dad usually would only arrive home at like 5:30 or 6 from work. So there were like 2 or 3 hours where it was just me and my mom and my sister at home. And my mom didn't talk about it. She acted super normal, whatever. And then my dad came home and she like talked to him alone and was like, Kareem said this thing in the car. And then my dad sat me down and was like, this word was said in the car on the way home. Do you know what it means? And I was like, no. And he was like, okay, it's a very bad word and you shouldn't use it. So naturally, I Googled it. And that's when I learned what gay was. It was very pornographic. I learned in a very pornographic manner. What's funny is that like I knew what the word lesbian was before because I had attempted to watch straight porn before seventh grade. And you know, when you just like search for porn, a lot of lesbian shit comes up. So I knew what that word was. And like, I'm not dyslexic, but I was always like lesbian, Lebanese. I had a lot of Lebanese friends. I was confused. I was like, is this what Lebanese women do? I don't know. And then when I Googled gay, I like got a lot of stuff that I didn't quite understand. And then I threw the word gay into a porn site. And immediately I was like, oh, okay. And it wasn't to like, I saw it and immediately was like, I am gay. Like that was not it at all. What I do remember happening very soon after that, well, this is where the friends part comes in, is that this kid from Kenya transferred into our school. And he was, this person, okay, I'm going to talk about this person. I'm going to use he, him pronouns for him now, because at that point, these were the pronouns that they used. But this person was immediately, I also like, I felt it's so weird, but I felt like he was a very feminine person. And I was just like, I want to know you. Like I suddenly was like, I really, really want to know you. But we were in different like homerooms or whatever, like we were in different classes. And then in eighth grade, we ended up being in the same class. And oh, another really big thing, I was like, I don't know if you know this about me, but I was like a very chubby child. And I think that's probably where the like physical strength thing in early grades came from. But I also always felt like physically inept and that I lacked agility. And this boy was also like a bigger kid. and we both actively tried to skip PE class, which I'd done every year. Like, I would just go downstairs to, like, the yard or whatever, and then as soon as, like, they did the head count and confirmed that we were present, I would then, like, run back into the library or the class and just, like, chill by myself. I also wrote stories a lot at that time. Anyway, so I did my little routine of escaping PE class. I get to class, and he's there. And I'm like, why the fuck are you here? This is, like, usually my room alone during PE hour. It was so funny, because over the course of, like, 30 minutes, we went from, like, I barely know your name to we are best friends. He told me that he had been sleeping with our... Well, he didn't say sleeping. He said we kissed. That he was kissing our prefect, who was also a boy. And I was like, oh, my God, what the fuck? And then that day, I went home. I did more Googling. I texted him and was like, I think me too. And he was like, oh, okay, I thought so. And I was like, I didn't think so until now, but I think so. And so then we, like, truly became inseparable. I became much more explicitly femme. And then people started thinking that me and my new best friend were gay, were together. And I was just like, you know what? If you want to believe that, you can believe that. And then at some point, like, very quickly after I realized I was gay, all my classmates would be like, what, are you gay? And they would say in, like, of course I'm going to deny this manner. And, like, I wouldn't deny it. I would be like, yeah, I am. What are you going to do about it? And so the bullying got worse between 8th and 10th grade. But it was nice that I had these two guys who had been together. And it was, like, a very, very dysfunctional little triad. Because we all had, like, weird, dumb 8th grade crushes on each other and all tried to make out and all, like, would randomly hide in the toilet and, like, compare dick sizes and, like, you know, like, download porn together and share flash drives. It was, like, so grossly 2010. And we were, like, what, 13? We were literally 13. Like, these two guys are, like, my first kisses, et cetera, et cetera. And then again, because my parents had been sending me out into the world since age, like, 8, by the time I was 13 and it was 2010, I was immediately like, I want to start hooking up with people. And so I pretty immediately started doing that by finding people online. This was before the apps and before anyone had smartphones. But I would find, like, websites and groups and meet with people.
If you live in the greater New York area or have a good microphone and would like to share your story on Closet Practice, anonymously or not, message me on Twitter at DocumentaB, on Instagram at DocumentaBarbarism, online at DocumentaBarbarism.com, or by email to buttstuff@DocumentaBarbarism.com, with only one A in barbarism. That's DocumentaBarbarism. In the meantime, be sure to subscribe to House of Barbarism on your pod thingy of choice so you don't miss a single episode of Adventures in Gaybysitting and Closet Practice every Monday, and Documenta and Son every Thursday.
At that time, this was 2010, so, like, what, Facebook was, like, 4 years old, and if you put into Facebook, like, gay men Dubai or gay men sex Dubai, there were, like, hundreds of Facebook groups, and each of these Facebook groups would have, like, 30, 40 to 100 members in it, and, like, people would go in there, literally throw their, like, age, height, and weight. So if you're wondering about my body dysmorphia, of course, that's where that came from. People would go in there and throw, like, their age, height, and weight, and their nationality, because Dubai is people from everywhere. And then their number straight up, and they would be like, I have a car, or, like, I have an apartment, or I'm in this neighborhood. And I, like, literally would meet strangers and hook up with them at that age, and most of them were adults, and I'm okay with that. Malls in Dubai are huge because, you know, malls in Dubai, and like, my parents are, like, obsessed with film. Like, they're like film fanatics, and so when I started being allowed to go out alone, it would be like, when I was 7, it was like, you're allowed to be out for, like, an hour or two. But by the time I was, like, 13, like, I could pretty much be out for, like, 4 or 5 hours. I was also, like, around the age of 10, allowed to go to the movie theater alone. Which actually is funny, because you weren't legally allowed in the UAE to go into the movie theater alone. And so the theater literally would not sell me tickets. And my parents would like, my parents had to like meet, a, like go to this one mall that was very like 15 minute walk from our home and talk to this one lady who ran the box office and be like, he is allowed to come here alone. And so what this meant is that I also had like big chunks of time where I was allowed to not answer the phone while I was out. So I would always pick like the longest fucking movie. Like I would find like a 3-hour Bollywood film and I would be like, this is the movie I'm gonna watch, mom and dad. Don't call me from 5 to 8. And then I would like take the price of the movie ticket and spend it on a cab to go to someone's house or go to someone's neighborhood and hook up with them. And it was always like, to this day, when I get a phone call, and this is like, I always blame this jokingly on my like Gen Z age, but when I get a phone call, I get super fucking anxious. I'm like, why are you calling me? Why didn't you just text? And I think where that comes from is that like, I constantly felt like I was gonna be caught, right? Like whenever my phone buzzed between, because also I was being bullied in school for being gay, and like, I think the teachers suspected something. The teachers definitely suspected. And there were moments of school where like, so the two other boys who were gay got caught in a bathroom stall together. And that was a whole thing. So, and I was their best friend. And I was brought in to be like, what do you know about these two people? And obviously we all like created a complete narrative that we were like, because we weren't allowed to have phones in school. So we were like, oh, we just like had a phone. And I wanted to show this person this very funny photo that I took. And that's why we hid into a stall together, so that I could show him the photo, because we're not allowed to have phones. Because of the hookups, because of my like, quote, like because of my like little escapes and like attempts to like see the world, I constantly felt like every phone call that would come to my parents while I was around, I would be like, someone has found my parents, or someone from school has found out something, and my parents are gonna like find out at any moment. And like, I think adult me should like would tell you that like my parents would never have thought that I was doing, like my parents to this day, if they knew that that's what I was doing at the age 13, they would be shocked beyond like their own imagination. And so like, I don't think they were ever suspecting me of any of this bullshit. But at that time, every time my parents got a phone call and I was around, I would like go into a full spiral. And I think that's probably, again, that's probably where my like neuroticism and paranoia to this day come from. But in terms of the hookups, like they really ran the gamut. Like I definitely also remember, and again, I was a pretty chubby child. A lot of these encounters definitely like informed a lot of like how I thought about sex and how I thought about how people think about my body. And, you know, in terms of like the dirty details, like it was everything. Like I truly had everything under the sun at that, between the age of like 13 and 15, often in people's cars and like hidden garages, often in people's houses. Yeah. And like, whenever I tell anyone this, they're like, oh my God, this is like abuse, yada, yada, yada. And I'm like, you know, I get that, like, obviously as an adult, I don't want to, neither would I ever have sex with a 13, 14, 15 year old. But I, as someone who was at that age at that time, I never experienced it as, well, except for that dark incident, which we can get into. I never experienced it as such. I don't necessarily regret these decisions. So the dark incident, like the short of it is like, I went to someone's house, I got there and I like did not feel it. I was like, this is not how you look. Also, I thought there was gonna be one person and there were three people. And I said I wanted to leave and they refused to let me leave until I committed a certain act. And I was running late and my parents were like, where the fuck are you? My parents were calling and this person took my phone. And I eventually like, I don't think I did the act, but I like somehow convinced one of them to let me go. And then I like ran home, I took a cab and ran home. And it was like I was fairly anxious and like swore off like meeting people online for a few months after that. And I also like had this anxiety that they followed me home and knew where I lived and were gonna come tell my parents, which again, like is a thought only a 14, 15 year old would have. Cause like no person is gonna show up to a parent and be like, your child sucks because they tried to have sex with me and I forced them into it and locked them in my house. Like, that's not a thing that would happen, right? Anyway, now that we've talked about that, which is a thing I've never told anyone about, hello. It's pretty miraculous that I did not get HIV, given that I, like, barely used any condoms between the age of, like... I got on PrEP when I was 19, which is 5 years ago, so it was, like, what? 2016, so, like, 6 years ago, Jesus. Between, like, the ages of, like... I think the first time I had, like, anal sex was probably, like, 14 and a half, 15. And, like... I had a ton of sex between that age and 19. And like, I want to say like maybe 60-70% of it was not with condoms. And I somehow never got an STI. Like my first STI test, I was in Florence. I was like 17 and a half, almost 18. And it was my first time getting an STI test because like, I didn't know how to get one or if I should get one or if like I could get one under the age of 18 without my parents. Until I was like studying abroad and as a freshman in college. And so when I got to that like little weird clinic in Florence, I was like, holy fuck, I probably have everything. I'm going to die. And I was like the most anxious thing. And then they were like, oh, you have nothing. You're great. And I was like, are you fucking kidding me? How do I have nothing? I've like truly not been careful at all. And like, I knew what HIV and AIDS were all along. And somehow I still like dove right in. So I came out to everyone in school, and then I, like, came out pretty publicly online. I came out to my cousins. My cousins all know, like, all my contemporaries know. So remember I said one of the first people I came out to was my sister? I came out to my sister when I was 13 and she was 10, and she, like, barely knew what that was, and she was like, she didn't know what that was, and I had to explain what being gay meant. And then she was like, that's bullshit. There's no way that's true. And the same thing happened with my cousins. Like, they had no conception of queerness until I told them I was gay. And then I had to explain what gay was. And they were like, no, bullshit. There's no way that's true. But you know what's funny? While they didn't have any conception of gayness, every one of my contemporaries in my community that I told was immediately like, this is not something we can tell any adult. So it's funny that, like, they didn't know what being gay meant, but they knew that it would be... not that it would get all of us in trouble just talking about it. Oh, the funny thing, here's the other funny story. So like a year or two after I realized I was gay, so let's say maybe I was 15, 16, we were back in Egypt for the summer, and my grandfather, who is a fucking weirdo, my grandfather has a PhD in theater. He truly like has no idea of what are appropriate and not appropriate things to say social settings. Like I have hundreds of stories of my grandpa saying something in front of like 10 people and everyone else being like, oh no, you idiot. But I was 15 and my grandpa randomly, we were sitting on the couch with me and my dad and my grandpa. And he randomly goes like, do you know what he said the whole sentence in Arabic except for the word homosexuality. He goes like, do you know what homosexuality is? And I was like, yeah. And then he like proceeded to talk to me for 20 minutes. And again, like, oh, here's the other part. During all my teen years, when I would go home for the 3 months in the summer, all of my dad's family, my dad has a second cousin who everyone suspects to be gay or actually bisexual. And there's like this secret story that I've been told hush hush in secret that this second cousin who's like been framed as this villain in his family had a threesome with his best friend, who was another man, and a prostitute, who was a woman. And so, like, there's this weird vilification. Like, I remember all through my childhood, whenever I would do anything, like, cry if something happened, or do anything that was at all, like, not deemed masculine, my grandpa would be like, that's not what men do. Get up, do this. That's how you should function, yada, yada, yada. And my dad's abuse and bullying, which was like about random shit related to authority when I was a child, very quickly became about like, as I turned 12, 13, became about like, you're too feminine and it's a problem. And it came down to like my posture, how I walked, how I sounded. So randomly, when I was 15 and we were in Egypt for the summer, and everyone in my family would talk to my dad about how like I was not enough of a man. My grandfather just asks me this fucking question in front of my dad. And I was like, yes, I know what homosexuality is. And I saw my dad be so shocked. Like, my dad was like, what the fuck? And then my dad was like, we should not talk about this. And then my grandpa soon left. And then my dad was like, so what do you know about homosexuality? And like, I was like, and then he asks me the weirdest thing. He goes like, and why do you think your grandpa asked us this, brought up this at this time? And I was just like, I don't know why he brought it up. You should ask him that. But I was like, I know what homosexuality is. And then he was like, I just want you to know that this is the worst thing a man can do, yada, yada, yada. And I remember my mom, like, separate occasion, same summer, saying something like, so, like, premarital sex is obviously, like, super, super frowned upon and not okay in Islam. And I remember my mom, my sister at some point being, like, making a joke about premarital sex and my mom being like, that's not funny. And my sister said, you would not be offended by this joke if Adam made it. And my mom was like, you know what? That's true. Yes, I do have a double standard about this. And then my mom goes like, the two things I will never forgive is my daughter having sex before marriage or my son being gay. So like, not my son having sex before marriage, because that technically, according to actual scripture, is just as bad as your daughter having premarital sex, but like, it's socially chill. Whereas like, your son being gay, not socially chill. Here's the hilarious part. Everyone in my family, like my uncles and aunts, my cousins who are my age have told me that they have been, and they were like the people I grew up with and was closest to, have told me that my uncles and aunts told them that they can't be friends with me anymore because I'm gay. So it's the kind of thing where like, everyone fucking knows. Like, at this point, and like, over the years, I've been obviously like in every academic setting, in every social setting, all of my friends in Egypt, in Dubai, in New York, in Abu Dhabi, everyone knows I'm gay. If you Google me now, you would know I'm gay. It's very simple and easy. So what it's come down to is like, I went to college, I like started doing things that were more and more like giving indications to my parents that I was gay. And they would still make jokes about like, oh, when Adam gets married one day, yada, yada, yada. As more time passed, these jokes started to like not happen anymore. And then like, I started writing plays that were about being gay, and I started like having some amount of a public presence. And my parents stopped asking questions. They were like, look, there are things, like at some point my mom sat me down and was like, oh, I came back the summer after my freshman year and was like all about like posting gay shit on Facebook. And my mother was like, you're embarrassing us. Why would you have these beliefs? And then at some point she asked me if I was, we got into fights about like LGBT things. This was 2015. So the summer that like gay marriage was legalized and I like put the rainbow flag on my profile and all that. And like a bunch of people in my family called my mother and were like, why is he doing this? And then I came home for the summer and my mother was like, you've embarrassed us, yada, yada, yada. And then she asked me if I was gay a bunch of times. And I said, no. And then and to clarify, my rationale for not telling them at this, like, I have actually been, my undergrad was a full ride. I worked all through college. I have been financially independent. And that's actually, even though my family is like fairly comfortable, but I chose to be financially independent from the age of 17 because of these like patterns of abuse where I didn't want to like have any, I didn't want them to have any amount of authority over me, to put it really bluntly. My immediate life circumstance would not be affected in any way if I came out to them. And that's been the case for 7 years now. And I chose not to because specifically my mother, who I'm very close to and love, like would be very, very hurt by it. But here's what's actually happened. Like, since I have had a public presence, my mother, there have been situations where I've posted things on Facebook while I was drunk that were very clearly indicating like me, like wearing a rainbow flag, etc. And what has transpired is that my mother has explicitly told my sister that she knows I'm gay and just does not want to think about it or talk about it, and has explicitly pretty much told my sister that she does not want me to come out to her. And I have kind of respected that. So that's where we are. Like, my mom and I are very close. We talk every morning. What's funny is that like every other quote unquote sin, whether it's like having a tattoo or drinking or the idea of having sex, like we talk about explicitly. Well, we don't talk about sex, but like we talk about the fact that I drink and routinely do drugs and like have tattoos and like all these things that I'm not supposed to do and eat pork. But like, that's the thing. She's like, I just don't. And we have a very, very close relationship, but that's just the one thing that I think like would be very hard for her to have to talk about explicitly. And I've, for now, respected that. And that might change one day, but for now, I'm comfortable with it. And it's, like, beyond just my, like, father and mother. Like, I'm obviously very, very out to every other person that is even in my peripheral vicinity. I'm really happy. I have a queer community. I have a chosen family. I have a really great sex life. I don't have a functional love life because I have issues that I need to work through. But I have... I'm very happy with my career. I'm very happy with my friendships and community and social life. And I'm very happy with my sex life. I think I have a tendency to only develop attraction or feelings for people who are somehow not available or not reciprocating. And it's something, it's a trend that has become very evident over many, many years. And something that many of my closest friends... including Eli, who was recently on the pod, and many other people have called out where they're like, Adam, have you noticed that like the last five guys you were hung up over were all people who were like not able, who for various reasons you knew from the start were not going to reciprocate, and yet you like still pursued them, and like these other guys who did show affection towards you, you immediately lost interest in. And I was like, ooh, okay. I mean... But you know what they say? There's the, like, people always say this fucking thing where, like, knowing the problem is half of solving it. And I don't think that's true, because I've known this for many years. I'm like, I don't actually know how to solve it. But it's a real thing. And a part of me often thinks, like, I think a part of it is definitely that, like, it's very, very hard for me to, like, genuinely, like, I come off as this, like, loud, precocious, bubbly, I'll tell you everything about my life thing. But the truth is, like, it's actually very hard for me to genuinely trust people and let people in. And I think a part of that, a lot of that, is actually, like, the paternal abuse. I'm still, floored is not the word, but the one thing that I, like, still don't quite understand in myself even is the amount of audacity I had as, like, coming from this household that was fairly abusive. And living, being in this context where, like, if any of my elders knew I was gay, I was fucked. And I, like, still somehow was, like, living my best life. And I still don't quite get that. Because everyone else I know who grew up in my milieu only started coming out, like, after college. But I would say, I don't know, sometimes I wonder if my relationship to, like, my body and sexuality would be better if I wasn't hoeing. To the extent I was so young. So I don't know. I wouldn't actually tell my young self not to be a hoe, but I would like maybe tell him to be a little more careful. I don't know. But I do wonder if like my hoeing years have had a, especially as like a young teen, have had a negative impact on my like growth generally, or like human development, but like maybe not, who knows? I don't know that I would tell him anything. I mean, it's been a wild ride, but I have enjoyed it. Oh, definitely don't, like, dye your hair. Don't bleach your hair in college. That was not a good look.
This has been another House of Barbarism podcast. Written, recorded, edited, and produced by Documentum Barbarism, your friendly neighborhood mountain man fairy princess. Remember, there is no document of civilization which is not, at the same time, a documenta barbarism. Mwah.